All right, welcome to Introduction to Link. I know Danny talked a little bit about the whole agenda today and what we're going to be doing. So the first presentation in the series is mine. My name is Andy Schwamm, and I'm an independent consultant. This is the little bit about me slide, your host for the next little while. I'm an independent consultant, currently working on a lot of Silverlight. I work with MVC and some other of the, what we call newer technologies. We're having fun with that kind of stuff. If you have any questions, by the way, throughout this presentation, please feel free to ask and interrupt me along the way, because we don't want to go too far off if people are getting lost or confused. And if you want to reach me afterwards, you can look for me at, you can email me at andy@ingenuitynow.net. I also have a blog. And I'm on Twitter at Schwamm, so maybe we'll see some of you guys out there. I do see some familiar faces. Some of you guys I recognize probably through Philly.net, the user group that I'm on the board member of. I'm a board member of. And I did want to mention that we do have Code Camp coming up in a couple weeks, April 10th. Looking forward to seeing people there. If you really enjoy this presentation and you learn a lot in it, come watch it again. I'll be doing the exact same presentation at Code Camp. Right, so I wouldn't expect to see too many of you guys in my presentation on April 10th, but I hope you'll come out and enjoy the day. We've got 60 sessions. I guess probably a lot of people are familiar with Code Camp because I see some familiar faces, but we have 60 different presentations on topics like SQL Server, SharePoint, all the core .NET stuff, of course, but in addition, SQL Server and IT. SharePoint, we've got a Silverlight track, an ASP.NET track, all kinds of great stuff. And we hope to see you guys at Code Camp as well. So without further ado, let's get into Link, because that's what we're here to talk about. I found this this definition on the internet, and it's a little lengthy, but I thought it was pretty good, but it brings up a couple of key points. Link, which stands for Language Integrated Query, right? It's always good to know that is an acronym, and it does have something behind it, Language Integrated Query. And what it really means is that Link gives you the ability to query data through the Microsoft .NET programming languages. And I think Danny may have touched upon a little bit of that. But what's really cool is that that Link, what it says is it offers a compact, expressive, intelligible syntax, right? And you'll see that when we get into the demos. It's really, it's nice to use, right? It's not just that it's functional and it works really good, but it's nice to use. It's one of those things that when it was introduced, a lot of developers, we'd also, wow, this is nice. This makes our code look good, right? This makes our code easier to manage because it's clean. And so that makes it exciting. And in addition, as this definition says, which I'm not going to read because you don't want to hear me read through this definition, it's a syntax that you can use to query different types of data. So once you're inside of your favorite language, in this case we'll be using C# for the demos, you'll query your collection of objects using the syntax. You'll query XML using the syntax. You'll query SQL, data that came out of a SQL database or out of entities, and using the same syntax. So I guess that's why I'm doing this first, because we're gonna understand the syntax. We're gonna learn about Link. And then throughout the day, you're going to see some other implementations of Link, like Link to SQL and the Entity Framework and some other things. And we'll see some really cool ways to use Link. And so with that, we'll just keep on moving. So I kind of touched upon this already. What can you query with Link? I'll be spending most of my time on what's called Link to Objects, really, which means, in memory, this is just lists of data. It doesn't matter where it came from. In my case, it'll just be generated via code. But you can query XML, SQL entities. I talked about this. But there's really some other interesting implementations that I've heard about and seen, such as Link to Active Directory. And I mentioned I do a lot of work with Silverlight. And if anyone's done any Silverlight here, I was just reading about something called Link to the Visual Tree, which allows you to look through your XAML and sort of query things that way. So there's really kind of no end to what you can do with Link. So the Link was introduced with the .NET Framework 3.5. That's when Link and Link to SQL came out. But Link to SQL and Link and all this stuff really wouldn't be possible without some language enhancements that were introduced in the the 3.0 framework. And these language enhancements are really great. And what you'll see when you start using Link, or any of the flavors of Link, is you'll see that these language enhancements are the type of things that, hey, I can use these in my code, right? Maybe I'm not using Link, per se, but I can use extension methods to make my code better. I can use anonymous objects to make my code better. We can use all these tools. So the more you use Link, it becomes a learning tool for us to write better code in other ways. And so we're going to spend a fair amount of time in the beginning on these language enhancements, because these are the building blocks of Link, and this is what to get you started. So we'll talk about, as I mentioned, extension methods. We'll talk about lambdas, anonymous types, var, etc. And I think we're going to probably just jump right into that. So the first language enhancement that we're going to talk about that came from 3.0 are these initializers. So there's a thing called an object initializer and a collection initializer. And they basically make for a nice, easy way to initialize your object, whatever that object is going to be. And I'm going to jump into code samples really quick. We're going to spend a lot of time in code. I want to point out that they don't replace your constructors, and I'll show an example of that, but they are a really nice syntax, and they kind of become important when you start using Link. And the collection initializer is basically the same thing, but instead of initializing an object like a person object, it would be to initialize a list of persons object. And I think we'll go right into a demo. So, let's see. I have this solution. You're not going to watch me type too much. I may do a little typing, but most of my samples are kind of canned and ready to go. I should point out, and I'm going to say I'm awfully proud of myself for this. These samples, everyone always says, they're going to be on my blog, right? Well, they're already on my blog. I did it last night, and thank you. I'm proud of myself because sometimes it ends up being, weeks before you get stuff. So, if you do want to see these samples, they're actually there, ready for you right now. So I'm going to jump right into these samples that are called the language enhancements and go right into some samples. And am I missing something here? This is a good way to start hello. This is supposed to be the easy part. Let's try a different one. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Odd. We can always just, I'm just going to close Visual Studio and restart Visual Studio. Or not. My little server thing, is my data access, little light is spinning like crazy here. So let's just go back to the, let's do it the other way. Do the run as administrator. I don't think this will matter, but let's just start this up. Maybe it'll behave nicely. I'm going to go in and make sure I get the right version of the project. Yeah, I tempted the demo gods, didn't I? Worst case scenario, I'll just open up Notepad and we'll just type all this stuff from scratch. Wouldn't that be great? Hey, huh? I should get some applause for getting Visual Studio to open, huh? Come on, where's the love? All right, thank you. Nothing like a presenter asking for applause. All right, so I have this sample, and it's always a challenge with screen real estate on these things, but let's see. So we were talking about object initializers, and of course I tried to go with a good font size, and already I'm seeing this stuff doesn't fit too well on the screen. But you know what? I'm going to go to a slightly lower, because you guys can see this pretty easily, right, screen-wise? So I'm going to go to a little less of a font. I thought 16 is usually a good one, but just because I want to get a little more on there, let's just see what that looks like. Can you guys still see that pretty well? Okay, great. I can get a lot more on the screen there. So all right, let's talk about these object initializers. I want to point out that I have a class called Person, which is a pretty simple class that shouldn't seem too unusual to anybody. But I want to point out that my Person class has three properties, a first name, a last name, and a collection of phone numbers, which are just strings. You'll also note that I have a default constructor that takes no parameters. In addition, I have a constructor that takes two arguments, the first name and the last name. So that's going to be kind of important when we look at how I'm doing this. So just kind of keep that in your mind. So to show my object initializer sample, the first example is using the actual constructor, right? This is the way we're pretty comfortable doing that, and it wouldn't be uncommon to see me creating a person with a first name and last name, Fred Flintstone, and now I've got a person. Now, of course, I can also use the default constructor with no parameters and set the first name and set the last name manually, and this shouldn't be unusual to anybody either. But now I'm going to use the object initializer, and you'll see what I do is I call the new keyword. I still use the new keyword, but I'm not calling any constructor. Matter of fact, I've even left out the parentheses there because they're not even necessary. And you'll see the curly braces. That's always your indicator that we're going to the initializer pattern there. And I'm setting first name equals Bam Bam because I couldn't think of anything else. So I went with the Flintstones theme here. But remember, in my constructors, there is no constructor that takes just a first name, right? So to be clear here, I'm not calling a constructor. I'm simply calling, in essence, the default constructor. You're always calling a constructor. I'm calling my default constructor, and I'm setting the first name. Now, we've got IntelliSense in here. So if I want, I can actually access... Oh, okay, I thought that was my computer acting really crazy. I can set the last name if I want in here. I can say last name equals... you know, whatever, foo. I can do anything. I can access any of my public properties through this. And this gives you a lot of flexibility because you don't have to have a million different overrides on your constructors to do different types of setting up of your objects. And of course, in .NET 4, you have optional arguments and things like that, which is a whole different way to go about this. But, you know, we're kind of sticking with these samples for now. Now, I want to point out that constructors still matter. So imagine I have this imaginary data source type of object, which would take maybe in its constructor a connection string or something. That would be, let's say, mandatory, right? Can't use this object without setting the connection string. But I also have a timeout property on this little imaginary object, and that's optional. Maybe I don't want to set the timeout property. So I did want to show that if I use this, I can still, if you see in this example, I'm calling the constructor. I'm still using my my single constructor. Matter of fact, it's the only constructor, so I have to pass in that value. And I can even combine both of these things and call the default constructor passing at the connection string and still set the timeout using the object initializer. You can still do this kind of stuff. So next, we have collection initializers. And collection initializers. It's kind of the same thing. So the old way we would do this is we would maybe, create a list of strings called phone numbers and then call the add method and add in strings. But with collection initializer, I just do that same syntax. I say it's a new list of strings, and by default I get the default constructor, and I can pass in my strings just as I would. And these are comma separated, so I can put in any number of values in here. You know, and it's a string, so it really doesn't matter what I put in there. But now I would have three objects in my collection. And in the samples I have here, you know, we can do all sorts of ways to combine these things. So, I was showing simple strings. Of course, we can also, in our collection initializer, put a more complex object, going back to that person that I showed earlier. So here I'm creating a list of person. I always like that, a list of person, people, right? A list of person, sounds funny to me. And in this case, in my comma separated values, just like I did here with my strings, I'm putting in individual objects. And in this case, I'm using the object initializer for each one of those. So you can combine collections and objects in a variety of ways. And I think it makes for, you know, I was kind of touching upon this earlier. I think it makes for a nicer syntax, sort of, than you know, this, right? I mean, this isn't so bad, but when you get into really long lists of complex objects, it gets a little funny, I think. But look at, I think this, which is, you know, not really fitting on my screen completely. I'll try to slide it up so you can see it from the back. I think this is a kind of nice, clean syntax of a way to initialize your collections. And I kind of showed combined, so I'll skip through that and go back to some slides. Any questions on these collection initializers, by the way? Yes. Yeah, so the question is, can you work with key-value pairs? And certainly, you can do all kinds of cool stuff with key-value pairs and collection initializers. So. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is this var keyword. Now, var is, and again, this is part of the 3.0 enhancements that make link possible. Var is an implicitly typed variable. And, you know, since .NET 4.0 is coming out, It's worth mentioning that this should not be confused with the dynamic keyword, which is a whole different animal and really cool. So, you know, look into .NET 4.0 when you get time, but we're not going to get into that. So a var, well, if you look at the little small samples I have here on the slide, you see I'm defining var s equals hello world, right? So it's implicitly typed. So as soon as I type those quotes, .NET pretty much knows this is going to be a string right here, right? And if I put a number in there, it implicitly figures out that I is going to be 100, which is an int, et cetera. Now, this can't be changed once it's set. So once I set d equals 100.5, it's a double. And for the life of d, it is a double. And it's locked in as such. I'll just go in and show some samples of this stuff. And the reason I'm going to show samples, because it's really not all that much different than the slide. But what I do want to point out, and you know what? I wanted to start, you know what? This may help here. Let me just real quick go to ZoomIt. I'm going to try to not overuse ZoomIt, but it kind of will, I think, come in handy here. So here I have, you know, my address, which is a string. And if when I go to the address variable here, and I'll see if I can, you know, zoom it over that you can see. This is, it shows, even in IntelliSense, address is a string, right? It's not a var anymore. It becomes a string, and it is locked in as that for the life of the variable. Yeah, sure, question.
Is there any reason in a case like this where you'd want to use var over string?
That's a great question. The question is, you know, in an example like this, would I want to use var over a string? And I think no. Honestly, I would not. Right. For the case of these samples, it's worth pointing out to make var a string. Now, there's sort of a debate, and when I go to different, I work in a bunch of different places, and there's a big debate. It's almost like some of these other topics in programming. You know, you have people on religious sides of both this argument. Should you use a var or should you not use a var? My feeling is, you should use a var where you need to use a var. And again, this is just my opinion. Some people say make everything a var. Because it's really easy, and you just have all your vars down there. And I say, well, IntelliSense, and you know, we'll see later, when we use IntelliSense over that object, whatever it is, it still works. You still have IntelliSense, and you can still hover over it, and it's a string, or it's an object. So why not just use var? Isn't it great? Isn't your code nice and readable? And I would argue that this string, first name equals Ben, is more readable than var address equals, you know, 100 Main Street. I just completely feel that it shouldn't be overused. Interestingly enough, I don't know if you notice, I use a tool called ReSharper here, which is a really, you know, neat Visual Studio add-in. And by default, if you don't change its properties, ReSharper will give you these little tool tips on all your objects and say, hey, why don't you make this a var? It'll be better. And as much as I love ReSharper, I think they're wrong there. I don't get it. Now, on the other hand, there are times when var is 100% necessary, right? And where it's 100% necessary, it's great. There's also some other times, you kind of develop your own feel for these things. There are some times when I have long variable names and I'm in a loop, and it just seems like, you know, it's pretty obvious if I use a var here that the next developer who comes along is really easily going to be able to see what's going on. But you sort of develop a feel for that, and, you know, everyone will come up with their own pattern. Yeah, question here.
I just want to make a statement. I think var should be used to delineate link queries. So you could easily find the link queries in your program just by looking for the var key.
Sure. And I'm going to repeat that because we're recording here. The comment was that var can be used to sort of show where a link query is being used. And anytime you see var, you would know that this is a link. And sure, that seems like a pretty good idea. Again, I think this is These are these things that, you know, we kind of come up with on our own standards. But that's a pretty neat idea that I hadn't considered. But we will certainly, if you're wondering, so, you know, what's the point of this whole thing? We'll get in the next samples pretty soon, you'll see why we need to var and why it's pretty important. Let's go back to the slides real quick. And that was var. Anonymous types, and these slides don't have a whole lot on them, but they just give me some talking points here. Anonymous types are used to declare, you can create a type, a class, if you will, on the fly. It's not actually, it doesn't exist in code anywhere, right? It's just something that just is. And the way you do that is, in the little snippet I have here below, I say new. And you notice I don't say new type of anything, right? Just new nothing. And I'm using my object initializer. Right? So now you start to see how these different pieces of the puzzle work together. Here's my object initializer. And I'm saying first name equals Andy, last name equals Schwamm. That means I'm going to have a new object. It's not a person class. It's not any other class. It's just a new object that has two properties, a first name and a last name. So why is var important here? Well, how would I put this into memory somewhere so I can use this later? I can't say new something, you know, new. I don't have an object to instantiate, but I can say, well, this is a var. I can say var me, you know, whatever equals this new thing, and I'll just go into some samples and we'll see how this works. I was kind of to go back. I have this person class, and in the past I said new person. I called the constructor, and I could set the properties. I also showed how you can use the object initializer to instantiate a person and set the properties in the initializer. In this new example, we're going to notice I'm saying var presenter, right? It's not a person. It's a var, okay? It's not that object we used before. And I'm going to say equals new what? Well, it's a new thing. We'll call it a thing. That has a first name with a property, you know, Andy, and has a topic, and that's introductional link. And I want to be specific here because I don't want to confuse you because I had this person class we were using before. Person doesn't have a property called topic, right? There's no sleight of hand here. There's nothing up my sleeves. I'm not using an old object that we had before. And simply put, I can say presenter. Now in this code below, which I'm not going to run, but if I was to try to write this out to the console, I have my presenter, and look at that. Whoa, IntelliSense, right? IntelliSense shows that my var, or whatever we want to call it here, has a first name, has a topic, and has, well, you know, this other object kind of things that are there for us. So if I put that back, you know, we have that. Now, what I can't do is this example here. I can't say presenter.lastname, right? That would be something that might be a little closer to the dynamic keyword in .NET 4. I can't just reach into this thing and say, oh, give me a property that doesn't exist. So this doesn't compile, and ReSharper here is showing me that it turns red and says, you know, that won't work. So I don't even need to run the compiler to do that. In addition, I can add something else if I want here. I could say, I don't know, age equals, you know, 43 if I want, whatever. I mean, I could put anything I want into here, right? And when I do that, again, I have IntelliSense. It just, you know, comes up. Age equals, here's my age, right? So I have access to these things. You can't change it once it's set. Once you call that initializer, you're kind of locked in that way. Now, I just want to show also, I'll use that zoom thing here. If you see this, it kind of shows what my anonymous type here is. Tick A. Not really sure, you know, what the significance of tick A is, but that's what you see when you look at these anonymous types. And it even shows the definition that it is a string, which is has those three properties there. So it's showing that it's a var, but it is now a fully functioning object. It's just not defined anywhere in code. Any questions about sort of the use of var and anonymous objects? Yes? I would be able to make a list out of those. As a matter of fact, you know, that's often what happens in link, is you make lists of those things. So, yes. Now, the question was, could I make a list of them? The answer is yes. Okay. Now, you know what? I guess I should full screen here. So, The next cool piece of the puzzle here is extension methods. An extension method is used to extend the functionality of a class. And again, this is one of those things where you might think, well, what do I need to do that for? When I create a class, I can put any methods on it I want. And sure, you can. And I would suggest that when you create classes, if you have methods you want to have on there, you know, put them in there. But what if I want to extend another class? Maybe some class that's in a DLL that I've imported. Or maybe a class that's in the .NET framework. Well, there's a few ways you can do that. You can inherit from the class if you want. Or you can, if it's a partial, you can write a partial class. And, you know, there's lots of ways we can do this kind of stuff. But sometimes you can't. So if a class is sealed, for example, and it's not a partial class, and, you know, it's a sealed class, you can't really add additional functionality to it. And this is something we've really never been able to do before, but with the addition of these extension methods, you can add other functionality to existing classes. So I'll show an example of one here, but there's a few rules you need to follow. Your extension methods need to be defined in a static class. They actually need to be static methods themselves. And in order to use them, you have to reference the namespace that they're in. You know, it's pretty simple. And I'm going to show an example of this thing called a time ago, which is an extension method. It was the first piece of 3.0 or 3.5 code I ever wrote. It's my first day on a job somewhere, and I was all excited to use this stuff. And they said, do you know anything about these things? I said, sure, you know, I read up on them. I'm ready to go. And they said, all right, well, write a method that, given a date, when compared to now, gives you a nice string that says sort of how long ago is this thing. So if you supplied a date of, what's today? Today's the 20th, right? No, what's today? I'm lost. I don't know. What's today?
27th,
thank you. So if I gave it the 26th, it would say yesterday. It would return a string to me. If I gave it a date from, you know, last year, it would say last year, right? It would say 5 minutes ago or whatever. So it's kind of a helper display type of thing. And I'll show it now. Because it's an extension method, and that's what we're talking about. So here we go. Here's my example. So I'm going to jump right in and show you what the extension method looks like. It's in a static class called extension methods. You can call your class whatever you want, and you can put any number of extension methods in there. So they have this cool and unusual method signature that we might not be used to seeing. And you'll note that it's public and it's static, and it returns a string, right? We have to that's pretty normal. But you'll notice in the argument, there's sort of three things going on there. We don't usually see that, right? The this is the new part here. You don't usually see that. So the way it works is, if I jump over to the sample, you'll see now I have an instance of a date. I'm just using now, but now is an instance of a date time. And I'm calling time ago on it, right? And so what this does is it takes that date time now, and it shoves it in as my argument, right? How else would I get the value that I'm trying to work with in? So it shoves it in there. And so so it's a date time called date, but it uses this, meaning use the instance and get the value. And all I'm doing in here, and what goes on in this method is really irrelevant to the example, but I'm just basically doing some math on my dates, and I'll return different values based on what it is. And keep in mind, you know, date time is sealed. And so I couldn't just do this. I couldn't inherit date time. I couldn't, you know, add this functionality. But this is like a really usable thing. So what you see from an example like this is Link uses these extension methods a lot. And we'll get right into that because I think we're going into, you know, the true Link now. But you can use these things for your own code. This is the kind of thing that you could probably imagine can make other code that you're doing really easily. If you wanted to display this kind of thing, you could use this. And to tell you the truth, I mean, I could run this sample, but I don't really think it's going to any value, you know, to running this code. It more is, how does it work? Does anybody want to see it run? I mean, you know, if there's any need? Right, okay. We'll move on to the good stuff. Any questions about extension methods? Yeah.
Do you find that you use them a lot or
a little bit? Question is, do I find that I use them a lot or a little bit? It's one of those things you kind of got to develop a feel for. I don't.
When you're using them, are you usually using them against the .NET framework where there are a lot of sealed classes?
Yeah, I find that on date time is a great example, right? You can do any number of cool things. on string. Sometimes you want to add new methods to string. You know, one place I worked, we had something that, you know how you have like, what is it, string is null or empty, and you can pass in your string to find out if the value is null. Well, we wrote an extension method that sort of did the opposite of it. Well, it did the same thing, but it was just an easier syntax. So, yeah, anytime you're working with strings or date times, there's just so many cool things you can do with extension methods, and we do use them a lot. There are use cases where you have your own classes, and you would write, even though you don't want to build it in, you can write extension methods because by putting those extension methods in a different namespace, you can sort of say, well, even though it's meant to be used on this class, only a certain subsection of my code will have access to them because they're referencing this namespace. So, you know, you can kind of build up these sort of combinations and build your toolkit that way.
Andy?
Yes?
Sort of a follow-up to that question, though. Do we use them? Well, we certainly use them a lot, whether we create them. We may only create them some of the time, but we end up using them.
Oh, sure, yeah. The question is, to follow that up, is, you know, how often do we use extension methods? And I think, that, you know, what Malcolm's getting at here, the answer is we use them a lot. We may only create a few of them, but when we create them, we implement them an awful lot. We'll use that, let's say, that to time ago method. I may use that thing, you know, hundreds of times in my application. And in the example, when we get into the next thing here, which is query operators, you're going to see that we use extension methods a lot. We're just not using extension methods that we wrote. We're going to use extension methods that Link is providing. So that's a great segue into the next slide, which is query operators. Now we're actually going to get into true Link and not the 3.0 enhancements. So what is Link? Well, Link is, in some ways, you could just say it's a whole bunch of query operators. It's a whole bunch of query operators which are extension methods. That's the label that they put on them. So it's a whole bunch of extension methods that we can now use in our code to query our data. So some examples, as I show right here, are extension methods like select, like where, or order by, things like that. Now, these are extension methods on a certain type, the type IEnumerable, which is an interface, I should say, IEnumerable of type T. So anywhere I implement IEnumerable of type T, I can use these extension methods to query my data. And so what would you expect to see in a collection of query type functionality, things like select and where? It kind of makes sense that those are the kind of functionality we'd have. So now, with that, I can query any collection that implements IEnumerable. And some of those collections would be the generic list that hopefully a lot of people are used to seeing around here. If you're using lists, you can query, you can use Link on arrays, on a dictionary of key-value pairs, even on string. I thought that was kind of interesting, and I just realized that recently. String is actually a collection of characters, char, right? So you can actually do Link on a string. Okay, so that's a little bit about what query operators are, which is really just Link's name for extension methods. And there's a question.
Did you speak about
that one? Do I have what?
Did you speak about
do I have the
did
the G?
Did you
an example? Not sure I'm understanding. I'm having trouble hearing. Does anybody? Oh, I'm sorry. Do I have a list of them? Sure, of course. I do not. I'm going to go through a bunch of samples where you'll see a lot of them, but I will show you where you get that list. It's actually really simple. When you go to anything that implements IEnumerable and you hit dot, you get IntelliSense, and there's the whole list. So I'll show you that, but I don't actually have that list. And I'm sorry I was having trouble hearing your question. The question was, you know, is there a list of them? And there's a pretty easy way to see what those are. So the next slide, we'll talk about lambda expressions a little bit. You know, I've showed these extension methods, select and where and order by, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of them. But where wouldn't be wouldn't be very helpful if I couldn't say where what, right? Where name equals Andy, or where, you know, my count is greater than 10 or something. And that's where we get into lambda expressions. So lambda expressions, first of all, you know you're looking at a lambda when you see the lambda operator, which is that equals greater than sign. And here's a little sort of code snippet sample. if we had a list of customers and a customer list, we could say customer list where, and you see your lambda expression. This is the way you do your filtering, if you will, on it. Now, lambda expressions, actually, we're talking about this actually before the session. A few people were in here. We're actually talking about this. You know, what goes on behind the scenes is actually fairly complicated and has to do with anonymous methods and delegates and things like that. But that's not really critical to using them, right? We don't actually need to know. It would be great, and it's sort of outside of the scope of this presentation, is what's going on behind the scenes here. But actually, quite a lot is going on under the covers that the .NET framework and, you know, compiler is doing things for you. But it doesn't really matter because it's such a great simple syntax and it's really easy to use and it's pretty easy to read too, I think. It takes a little getting used to if you're new to it. But C, the first thing there, C is sort of, I like to think of it as the instance. It's the variable that we're working on. So if I had a customer list, C is the customer. And I tend to often use the letter C or, you know, sort of one-letter things, but you can define these variables any way you want. That was my choice in this code here. And then I'll say, you know, so I've defined C, and then I say C.name equals Smith. So where, and you can just really read this as simply where C, where the name equals Smith, right? And you get really used to reading these things. Don't worry too much if you don't actually understand them. Trust me on this. I know that sounds kind of bad, but just start using them. Just start enjoying them, and you'll get comfortable with them really soon. So with that, we'll get right into some samples of, save that, some of this stuff. So let's see, query operators, let's close this. Okay. And I can run these samples easily in a little console app if I want. So how would we do this in the past, right? I always think it's good to sort of compare the old way to the new way. And the old way doesn't go away, it's just... Link makes things a little easier. So imagine I had this list of strings, call it names, and it's just some of the presenters that are here today. If I wanted to find one of these items, let's say I wanted to find the string for Andy, how would I do that? Well, I have my list, and I'd have to loop through with a for each loop and look at each name in the names list and then say, you know, if name equals Andy, and then save it into some result that I could use later on. And this should be familiar to us. It's not a bad way to do it, but it's not quite as easy as maybe in this first extension method that we're going to show, this example called single. And you know what? Before I do that, let's show what the gentleman was asking about before. Names here, I'm using that same list I had before. Names is a list which implements IEnumerable. And if I go to IntelliSense here, here's that list. And you maybe can't see that so well, but... anywhere you see this little down arrow next to the little symbol for method, that's how you know it's an extension method. So anything that has a down arrow, and you can see there's a lot of them in here, those are link query operators. Okay? So how simple is this compared to the old example? Names.single. Single returns one object, one item from my list, and I say, for n, you know, where n is equal to Andy, and I have name in there, and it's as simple as that. This is what I like about link. This takes my code that used to work fine before, but makes it completely readable, completely manageable, maintainable, and all that. Here's a question.
How's that different from the distinct?
Different from the distinct. Well, I think distinct returns a collection. Single returns an item, because distinct will return if I had a whole list of names, and let's say Andy was in there three or four times and Bill was in there twice, but Danny was in there once, I think distinct would return to me a list of Danny, Andy, and Bill. And so that's sort of the difference there. Single returns one item. It does not return a collection. It's important to point out that if Andy did not exist in that, that would throw an exception. So there's also an extension method called single or default. One second. So I will go to my, again, I have IntelliSense there on my names. I can say single or default, and Andy will return a string Andy. If I look for Ben, which does not exist in that list, then name 2 will actually be null, but it wouldn't throw an exception, right? So it's still valid code. There was a question.
I don't know if this is the right topic, but you're going to cover this later.
Okay.
One of the things about when we started using Link was we have people who have been using coding SQL for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Always be done in stored procedures, because to get a person that could combine
Certainly.
You could have 100 lines of SQL to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a reason in terms of getting this link working where you have to start doing this in link code, why you wouldn't use link to SQL just to execute stored procedures as if we did in the old days to bring to get data back, to do CRUD stuff?
Right. So
maybe we get to the same, but is there a general philosophy about that? Because what we ended up doing was we don't want to have to learn all this, write all this link stuff. We'll just execute a stored procedure, pass it parameters, and we'll get our person back.
Sure.
And
now,
stored in the var object.
Sure. Now, the question has to do with a little more on a link to SQL world and comparing that to, why wouldn't we, if I'm explaining this right, why would we sort of get a whole collection of objects in different ways and then combine them in link as opposed to using link to SQL to call a stored procedure, which we might aggregate my objects together and do that. And honestly, that's probably a better question for the link to SQL talk, which is coming up next. But I can touch upon the fact that, because keep in mind, there's a little bit of a blur here. I'm talking about link to objects, right? And I'm not discrediting the question, but we haven't touched a database yet, right? And Rob's talk next, he's going to get a link to SQL and all kinds of cool stuff you can do with that. So this is maybe a little bit better question for him. However, there are pros and cons to all different approaches. I've worked at places where we've used link to SQL to simply call a stored procedure. I've worked with link to SQL where we built up our objects separately using the pure link to SQL model. I happen to like the link to SQL model away from stored procedures from a unit testing perspective and from a simplicity perspective because you have, sort of C# code versus C# and a lot of SQL and a lot of mixed technologies and things like that. And so I think the answer to that question is, and often, maybe Microsoft, maybe the true link to SQL people don't want to hear this, but it comes down to personal preference probably in a lot of cases and some with that. And there's maybe a response, and we'll talk about that, but I want to keep it moving. But did you have a response on that?
Well, I don't think it's mutually exclusive.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
There are times where the stored procedure may return hundreds of objects, and we still might want to use linked objects to help us.
Even after you got back, right. Right, and I'll repeat for the recording that the response is that they're not really mutually exclusive, and I completely agree with that. You'll use combinations of all these technologies together, and I don't want to spend too much time on that because I think that's going to take us off track. Is your question related to that, or?
No, I have a question. I said for him.
Okay.
Because the learning that we did all that kind of stuff, that's been done turn on that. You can do the Python, you put the parameter system, you can extend it. That's on the old fashioned way. The only path, only one. If you use a link like this, you can pass as many as you want.
Yeah, you can do. What he's saying is that there's you can pass in all sorts of parameters. You can build upon these things in a lot of different ways and combine these things to give you quite a bit of functionality. And hopefully we'll see some of those examples. But again, I don't want to go too far off track, so I want to keep this moving because we're timing this. Yeah, sure. Yeah, so the question is about the exception in this case. And thank you. In this case. If I was to do the single or default, well, let's run this, okay? I said I could run these things, and I will. I'm getting a, what isn't it a lot liking there? Oh, right, I'm sorry, let's make this name 3. Okay. Query operator, set this as my startup project. And if I run this, hopefully I have my little, oh, and I'll put a breakpoint in here, too, before I get too far. A little console app, so we'll run this number 3. Okay, so here I am. I've got my list. And I'll say single or default and get Andy. And, of course, if I hover over name, we see Andy, right? That's probably what we all expected. If I hover over name 2, we see that it's null. Okay, and so that's, again, the whole purpose of single or default. Now, in this next example, I'm asking for single. I'm asking for an item. And if I do, you get an exception, right? This is not swallowed. This is a full-on exception. And you'll have to handle that as you would any other exception.
The name suggests that you can set a default.
The name does suggest that you can set a default. I don't have a sample of doing that. I have worked with that in the past. So you can say, instead of null, you can return, I believe, like a new whatever, a string, or if it was a person object, I could return a person.
Where
I could.
Specify that?
What's that?
Where would you specify that?
I think it's in this. Is there a second?
Parameter
the call? No. Actually, in this case, it will set the default value. So the default value for a string, I guess, is, well, I thought the default value for a string was string empty. It is null. So the default value. So it returns the
integer, it's going to return a zero. Or
I think there's another extension method. I'm not positive. I don't have a sample of this, where you can specify. I know I've done something like that in the past, but you're right. The name does sort of express that. So let's look at the where clause. And, you know, I'm not going to show the old school. I want to kind of keep it moving. But let's say we want to do where. So we have that same list of strings. And now I want to look for all the names that start with the letter D. Right? So as opposed to a single, which is returning one, where is going to return a collection. And I can say, give me that list of, and the syntax is pretty simple. So I just say where, I use my lambda expression. N is a string, right? So I can do anything that a string has. I can apply other extension methods. I could do whatever I want to do in here. Say where N dot starts with D. And of course, I'm not going to run this because I want to keep things moving. But you would imagine we would get back two strings, Danny and Dane. Pretty simple. The purpose of some of these demos is not necessarily to run them, but just to show what the power is. But if there's any questions, I'm more than happy to stop and run some of these. Again, we're doing querying, right? So what would we expect? Well, we'd expect to do things like order by, and we can certainly do that. We can do a list of strings, and notice the syntax here, and I hate to say this in a presentation where I'm supposed to be the expert. I'm not exactly sure how to explain this one. This is a different type of lambda expression. Right? We're not saying where n equals something. We're just saying, well, where n.
Give me n, yeah.
Right. Now, if this was a complex object, right, I could say where, if this was person, I could say where p dot first name. And I don't know if I have an example of that. I don't. But, you know, you can access the properties. It would basically be saying order by the first name or order by the last name. But it's just in there. There's a name for the two types of lambda expressions, and it kind of escapes me, but I don't know what they are. In addition to order by, you can actually do then by, okay? So if you want to do multiple order bys, order by date, then by name, the syntax is simple. Then by, well, I don't have anything else, but let's just say it would be order by n. So the syntax would sort of be something similar to that. Well, you can't really do the plus, last name, plus n dot. Yeah, it only takes one, the order by only takes the one argument. I'm not sure you can do, the question was, is it different than doing n dot first name and n dot last name? And I'm not sure you can do that. Well, this is the desired way, you know, I'm not really positive.
If I want to do it by the lowercase version, I want to do a case independent last name. I can't say n dot last name dot to lower.
Oh, well, you could do that anyway. You could do n dot to lower, you know, right in here.
But if I could do expressions, why can't I just say n dot last name plus n dot person?
Oh, well, now you're concatenating them into one thing. Yeah, sure. You could. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, sure. You could build a string if you wanted to, I guess.
The 10 by lets you work on different types.
Yeah. Then by gives you a lot of different features. And I'm not really sure I know the answer completely to that question. But what's nice about this, again, is it's very readable. Right? Order by one thing, then order by another. So it's you know, continuing that sort of link fashion of making things really readable. And again, of course, there's an order by descending if you want to do the reverse of that. So, you know, I was using strings, and I thought, you know, that's kind of simple. And of course, we can use more complex objects. And so now we're getting into, like, you know, nice collections of data. And so I have this sort of data service, which I just made for samples. I want to be really clear here. I'm not calling a SQL database or anything like that. This is still just objects in memory. So I have this method called getArtist, which returns a sort of list of musicians and the bands they're in, just for some samples. And there's a list of bands, so you know, for some other samples that I'll do later. So when I call getArtist, it's really just returning me a list of musical artists, musicians. And so I showed, you know, single or default, and I just, you know, this example is here to show that I can specify I want to, you know, get the first name or get by last name. I have full IntelliSense in here, and of course that would return nothing. But you know, the point of this is here, this is not made just for strings, right? We can use complex objects here. Yeah, that's a good question. If there's two Pauls, if I'm not mistaken, and I could spin this up real quick, that throws an exception that says there is not one item. I think it says, you know, there are multiples, and it throws an exception, which can be kind of tricky. So you got to be really careful where you use single, because you certainly don't want to have that problem. Single comes in really handy. This is probably not a great use of single. Single is great for when you're looking at something by ID, where you know that there's only one item in there with the ID of, you know, 100, and you sort of have that guarantee. Let's do it this way. Let's take a look at my thing. I think I can say, I'm just looking for something that would be common, like a letter or something like that. Do I have anything with, what's that? Oh, yeah, a band name. All right, okay, great, thanks. So if I was to, let's change this one, single fault dot band name equals the Beatles. Of course, if I spell that wrong, we'll have some problems here. Run that. What is it, number 7, I think? I hope. So we get down there, single default. Exactly. So we get that invalid operation exception. So, and you know, I appreciate that, because that's something that I hadn't mentioned. It's a great question. So if there are more than one result, and when you call any of these singles, you get exceptions. And if it doesn't exist, you get an exception. So single is really tricky. You got to be careful where you use that. Now, yeah, sure, there's other things. Certainly we can do grouping, and we can do all kinds of stuff. Now, next thing is sort of this chaining. I call it chaining. I'm not sure if there's an official name for it. But the idea is, I mentioned that these extension methods, these query operators, are extension methods on the IEnumerable type. Now, single, I said, returns one item, so that's not returning an IEnumerable. But anything like a where, or any of these, you know, even order by and things like that, what their return type is actually another IEnumerable. So if it returns an IEnumerable, I can put a query operator on the IEnumerable, and I can sort of chain these things together. And so what you start to see is an example like this, and I put line breaks in there to make it more readable, but this is one statement. I say get artists where one thing, and where, if you hover over it, returns an IEnumerable of artists, right? So if that's the case, I can put another extension method on the end of it and say order by last name. And this is obviously the pretty common use case. You know, you want to build up fully functioning statements like that. So we can kind of chain them together. And I had a slide for that, but I don't think it really matters. And I want to see if I have a slide for this. No. Okay, great. So I have one more sample I want to show. Hey, Dan, how are we doing on time?
We're doing fine, but click on that on the quarter button.
Think.
Yeah, it's highlighted.
Oh. Okay, what does that mean? We're good? Okay, sorry for this technical interruption. We now return to our normally scheduled program. What time do I go till?
10:30.
Okay, great. Do you see, is that a stretch or a question?
Just a point. You had just said that's one statement and you did line break. Mm-hmm. Just as a comment, that's often the convention.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so The statement from the crowd here is that, Malcolm, actually is a friend of mine, says that, you know, he's pointing out that while I did this partly for the demo, because the screen isn't wide enough to show this whole thing, this is often the convention, that it makes for a nice readable statement to break these things down into different lines. Thanks for pointing that out. Okay, so we talked about anonymous objects and var. So you can do some really cool things to combine all these properties and all these features. So let's say I have this method getArtists, which returns that artist class, which has a first name and a last name on it. Well, in this case, and you have to sort of take for granted, you know, the sample may be kind of silly, but, you know, there's all these cases of things we'd want to do here in the real world. So what if I don't want to return an artist? What if I want to return some new object that aggregates data or does something slightly different? So what I'm doing here is I'm using the select extension method, And I'm saying select what? Select a new something, a new anonymous type, and I'm defining it in my initializer here, and I'm saying I want to give a new class that has a property called name and has a property called role count. And the role count is, I didn't show you this, in the artists, there's a collection of roles, which is like, are you the singer or are you the guitar player or the drummer or something like that, you know. Try to come up with samples for demos, and, you know, you'll understand. You do what you got to do. So in this case, let's say I want to return some object that has a list of these artists and the count of their roles. And in addition, I want to take their first name and their last name and combine it into one property, right? Because that's just what I want to do. So what I can do is I can return an anonymous object from my link statement. And then, just like before, I'm gonna save that result in a var. And that var is of type list. And if I use my hover over properly, you'll see that my... Oh, yeah, I can't scroll up so you guys can see it from the back. Let me see if I can make that happen. Where am I? Where's my mouse? Okay, there's my mouse. I'll try to make this a little easier. If I go like that and go like that, you'll see, well, it kind of came back to the same spot. But my anonymous object is an object that has a name and a role count, right? I have IntelliSense. I've sort of saved it in this variable called list, and I can reuse it later. So if I run through this, I'll run this sample. And of course, I have IntelliSense on these things and everything. When I run through this, 7, I think. No, whoop, 9. Thank you. We create our collection. And when I loop through them, you'll see that name is now, you know, Paul McCartney, because I concatenated the value, and the role count is the count that I put him in as bass player and singer, you know. So I think he did far more than that, but, you know, we'll leave it at that for the sample. And of course, in my, you know, I'm writing out to the console, and, you know, there's a list of musicians. So the idea here is that we can sort of build these other objects out. And when you get into link to SQL and some of these things, one of the comments and questions kind of led to this from earlier, is that if we did have some real data structure and we want to return, let's say, some object and we want to display it, but we're pulling from different objects, right, from different tables or collections, but we want to put them into one thing to display them maybe in a grid or something, we can group these things together. We can do all kinds of cool things with them. And this isn't to say grouping. I shouldn't maybe use the word grouping. I'm talking about building a new entity. I'm not talking about a group by in like a SQL statement, and you can do that as well. So, and I'm going to now move on to some other samples outside of the query operator world and talk about something called query expressions. Any questions from some of the stuff we've shown so far? Question here, yep. And there's been some great questions. I appreciate that.
In terms of what you just showed, isn't that similar? Isn't that an object kind of version of what views do in SQL where you could... Subselect or subset or make different kind of versions
sure.
of what you need. Is that equivalent in any way?
Yeah, the question is that sort of similar to creating views in a database? And yeah, you could certainly argue that this is similar to creating a view because you're creating a combination of things. There's certainly benefits to using a true view in the database for certain things, whether that be performance or something like that. But in the object model, yeah, that's what you're creating, right. Okay. So... next, we're going to talk about query expressions. So, query expressions is really just a different syntax for link to SQL. For link, and it looks kind of like SQL. So, a lot of people really like this because it's a familiar thing. So, if you look at the first example here on the slide, which is a SQL statement, and we want to select customers from the customers table, you know, this is what we would do, right? We would say C, because we've created an alias on customers, so we say C dot star, I want all the properties of customer from the customers table where the ID is not equal to 0, and I'm ordering by name. I just put a few things in there to make this an example. And now link offers this thing called query expressions, which is sort of a similar syntax for doing link querying. And so right off the bat, you know, it looks pretty familiar, except it's a little bit inverted. So you say from C and customers, where c.id equals 0, order by c.name, you know, order by the name, select c. And by saying select c, I'm not saying c.star, I'm saying give me that whole object, because we're not working with tables and columns, we're working with objects. So I'm saying select c. I could say select c.firstname or c.address or anything I want to do there. So it looks like SQL, and it's kind of familiar. You know, note, you don't see the dot notation here. I'm not using extension methods, right? This is a whole different syntax for querying data. Often the question is, well, why didn't they just make this look more like SQL? They got, like, really close. Why didn't they put the select at the top? The answer actually has to do with IntelliSense, right? You have to say from C and customers first, because we have to define what C is before we can use C. It's just sort of the nature of the way Visual Studio and you know, works. So otherwise, you know, they probably could have done that. It just wouldn't have helped us much as developers. So I'll take that as a trade-off, because I'm a big fan of IntelliSense. Otherwise, just like I said, we just take out Notepad and start working here. So to many people, this is a nice alternative that they don't always like query operators. So I'm going to show some other link samples, and I'm going to show some of them in the query expressions. Now, what's interesting about this is that one doesn't replace the other. As a matter of fact, if I understand correctly, query operators, the extension methods version, which we've shown so far, that's actually link. And from what I understand, the query expressions is laid over the top of it as a syntactical sugar, that you often call that, right? And behind the scenes actually gets translated into the other stuff that we're used to seeing. But it doesn't matter, right? And that happens, this is compiler stuff, not runtime stuff. So it really doesn't matter for you as a developer. Choose the one you like, and I say mix and match the two, and I'll show some examples where some things just work and are easier and look nicer in one way versus the other. So the basic syntax was pretty much what was on the slide. This is the old way we would do this. Let's say I wanted to call getArtists, and I would use my extension method where first name equals Paul, order by with my lambda, and put the last name in there. In the query expression example, well, it's written out a little cleaner, and for people that, some people aren't really loving lambdas, they find them a little harder to read. I actually happen to really like them, but personal preference, right? This is pretty readable. I mean, you know, this is, especially to those of us that have done a lot of SQL and things like that, this is pretty readable stuff. So this is actually the same exact code, these two statements that we see here, the one with the the operators, and the one with the query expressions. Now, you can do joins of your data, right? And I find this is one of those examples where I think that the query expression syntax, for me at least, it just rolls off a little easier. So I find that when I'm doing a join, I tend to use query expressions, although I've seen them and I've done them in the other way as well. I just find that this is just a little easier to write out. So if I wanted to join two collections of data, remember I had that artists collection and I have the bands collection. Now I'm not going against a database here, right? This is just objects in memory. There's no foreign keys on these things. They're not really related data. But I can tell you, since I wrote this, that the artists has a string property called band name, and the band has a property that's a string called name. And since I wrote this, I know that they happen to match up pretty well. But again, it's just coincidence. But think about that. If you have data that you know is going to match up pretty well, presto changer, you know, we can do joins on these things. So it's pretty cool. So the syntax here is I select from the artists in the collection of artists, which is an in-memory collection, and then I join, right, join into my bands, and I say what I want to join on. I want to join on the artist.bandname equals band.name. Now, I can promise you, for those of you that have never done this before, that you will go home, you'll be excited about this, and you'll write your first join, and the first thing you will do is instead of putting equals in here, you will do that. I can promise you will, because I still do this all the time, right? It's just instinct for us, right? This is what we do. That it doesn't work. As you can see, it's already turning colors, right? Not allowed. You have to use the equals keyword. Or dot equals. I don't know. Try it. I wish I had like a lot of time, because I'd love to like run all these cool ideas.
I never use the double equal anymore. I use
Well, you can't use the double equal, but the question is, it doesn't seem to like it. It doesn't seem to, yeah, that's right. That's an overload sort of for the double equals, which is not valid here. Equals, I believe, is a new, let's put that back to the way it was. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It actually is, I don't know if you get anything over it. No, you can't hover over keywords, but that's a new keyword. But that was a good, something we all learned right there. So anyway, I can do that join, and then I can select my artists from my collection. Now this is an inner join, right? By default, you get inner joins in here, and my collection. I can run this sample. How are we doing on time? We're getting a little tight. Do you guys want to see me run these samples, or do they kind of stand alone? They keep going, right? Okay, great. That's the way I feel too. I can combine these things and use anonymous types, such as doing a join. Right now, here's a great example where we talk about, you know, is this sort of like views and such. I'm taking my artists and my band names, I'm combining them, I'm doing a join, and I'm taking one of the properties from the band and some of the properties from the artist, and I'm creating an anonymous object in here, and I'm returning that in my var. So my var is a new anonymous object, and then of course I'm writing out the name of the band member and the year the band was formed. So this is that what we were talking about earlier, where it's sort of similar to a view. I'm combining both my collections, and I'm returning one list. Now you can also do outer joins. And the outer join syntax is another one that takes a little getting used to. This is other join syntax. You don't actually have to use the join keyword. You can use from, and then in the from keyword, you specify the where clause as those two things. It's just sort of a different syntax to doing this on with the equals or from here without the join keyword, and then you just say the where. I'm not sure if there's some specific cases where you have to use one or the other. I tend to use the join keyword because I think it's actually clearer when someone's coming in there. They see the. Oh yeah, if you wanted to do right, you could do like subselects and types of things like that with all that. So there's a lot of things you can do that are kind of cool. What did I want to show here? I guess I wanted to go to the I thought I had an out. Where am I skipping? Yeah, outer join. So the outer join syntax. This is another one that takes a little getting used to, but once you do it a few times, kind of becomes second nature. You say, I want to join and find all of the artists. Outer join to the band that do not have a band, right? So I think I have Elvis in my collection, and I said Elvis doesn't have a band. So so what you do here is you say from artists in the artist collection, join to the band's collection. The same kind of on, right? It's the same concept. Now this is where it gets a little weird, and again, it's one of those things you kind of get a little used to. From band in bands default if empty, right? So this, I skipped a keyword here. We're doing join into the bands on the band name, and I'm saying into bands, right? So I'm saying take that collection and put it into this other placeholder, and then go from that band's collection, right? Not the original bands, but this band, and say dot default if empty. Now I know this is probably a little confusing. If you're trying to follow along, it's actually a little confusing to explain, to be perfectly honest. And one of those things that, like, as you use, you kind of get comfortable with it and you see what's going on here. But what it's doing is, now I'm saying, I'm not selecting from the original collection, I'm joining from that band's temporary object, and, you know, it's going to marry those up, and default if empty is going to put a placeholder in there, right? So the join still happens, but there's a placeholder. And so then I'm going to say where the band is null. Where the band is that placeholder. So if the band is going to be the Beatles, band is going to be there. For Elvis, there's going to be null there, right? And everything's going to be married up, and it's going to come to where Elvis is, that's going to find that null as the partner, right? So I'm saying only give me the ones where the band is null. and you end up with an outer join. And I heard an okay. So I'm hoping that this is starting to make sense. And again, some of these things are a little hard to do in like the hour time frame that we have, right? To kind of explain in full detail and to really sort of grok this stuff right off the bat. So what I hope you guys take away from some of these things is a little bit of that, okay, Andy's showing, you know, what can be done and sort of the gist of it, but some of these things we need to go home with, play with a little bit, and sort of get comfortable with. And I see a hand. Sure. Question is, can you do this with the query operators and the lambda expressions? And you definitely can. You definitely can. I don't have a sample of it. I find that this syntax is a little easier in this case. And again, this is completely personal preference, right? You can do all of this stuff. Matter of fact, I said there's, you know, you can really interchange. I want to be careful. I'm pretty sure that the answer, that I'm correct in this answer. I don't believe there's nothing, that there's anything that you can't do with the query operators, with the extension methods version. You can do everything, because that's the true link. This is that syntactic sugar. This is a different flavor, and like I said, gets sort of compiled and turned back into query operators. So there are things that you cannot do in this syntax that you can do in the other original syntax. So you certainly can do this. I find that this is a little, just reads a little easier, and I don't know if it's because of my background. I did a lot of SQL, and when I look at this, although, it took me a couple days to get really comfortable with that outer join syntax, but when I look at this, I know exactly what's going on. Completely personal preference on these kind of things. And, you know, I kind of think I'm out of time, and I'm kind of hoping that, you know, Rob's going to be doing link to SQL, and I'm hoping he's going to do grouping on his things, but there are samples in here of grouping. I think I'm going to skip that because they said I go to 10:30, right, and it's 10:30 now. You can do paging, and I know for a matter of fact, as I was writing this demo, paging's really easy, and I'm pretty sure Rob said he had a demo of paging, so I'll just let that kind of stuff go. And so I'll probably call it that and go back to, let's just see here. Basically, if you guys have any questions, again, I mentioned that these samples are on my blog, and if you want to take a look, you can look at that grouping example. You can take a little further look at the join syntax. Certainly, you know, use your favorite search engine and find all kinds of samples. If you look for, I don't have it here, I believe there's a page somewhere, you know, go to Bing and hit, like, I think it's 101 link samples, something, is that right? Yeah, I see, right? There's a really great collection of all kinds of samples you can use. Those were samples I used in the beginning when I was learning. Feel free to go to my blog and email me if you have any questions. Yep.
Question.
Yes.
Is there a performance difference?
My understanding, and again, you know, I'm feeling pretty comfortable with this. There's no performance difference because I believe the compiler turns your query expressions into query operators already. So at runtime, they are the same thing. So it really doesn't matter which one you use. It becomes personal preference. That's why I say you really, you know, have fun with it. Use the two. I had an example in here, but I kind of ran out of time, where I combine them both, right? I'll do the join using the that SQL-like syntax, and at the end say dot order by, and, you know, go back to the query operator model. You know, you really can mix them, match them. I think so much of this comes to, you know, we talked about, like, when to use var, when to use these things. What's really important here? Well, you take out performance, because we always want to, you know, put a good eye to performance. Maintenance, right? What's going to be the code that's going to be maintainable? Now, what makes code maintainable to me, 6 months from now, can another developer open up my code, look at it with the minimal comments I've put in my code, and if anybody works with me, you know, there's probably not a lot of them in there, and, you know, can they look at that code and know what it does? And I think that's how you make a lot of these decisions on when to use these things. What really looks clean and what works, you know, well from that angle? And I think these are really good questions, and these are things that teams start to develop a feel and best practices within the team that you work with, and you know, for all these things, var is the big one. The big debate about when to use a var and when not to use a var is a classic. Any other questions? Because I'm pretty sure I'm done. But again, here's my information, how you can get hold of me. Hope you enjoyed this talk. Look forward to seeing you guys at Code Camp in a couple weeks. And thanks for your time.